Barbara Walters is here, and you are a tiny thing. Have you ever worried about weight?
Yes.
No,
really?
Yes. Oh, I'm so glad to be called tiny.
You are so tiny.
Well, what are you, 5'4", 5'5", something like that?
Yeah, almost 5'5".
Okay.
I think I'm very tall.
Really?
I think that's very small.
Do you have heels on?
Sort of, kind of.
Yeah.
You know, walking type, Chicago type walking shoes.
Yeah.
My Stuart Weitzman hikers.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what I'm wearing, Stuart Weitzman. Free commercial. They're the most comfortable.
Can you remember a time in your life when weight was a big issue? Can you look back at your photographs over the years ago?
Oh, well, I was very thin.
That was my fat year.
No, when I was, one of the chapters of my book is called Skinny Malinka Dink, because when I was a little girl.
Right. Your parents.
That's what my parents called me, lovingly, I say. But I was always very thin, so I didn't worry about my weight. And then, you know, when you don't, it's a pound here and a pound there. So about, 4 months ago, when I was, it seemed to me getting, nothing was closing. You know when you're constantly wearing your jackets open? I'm looking at both
oh,
of you.
Hello.
Yeah, you're wearing your, I don't want to say anything, but they're both wearing their jackets open.
Right.
Mine, on the other hand.
I
decided enough of this, and I couldn't do it on my own. I went to a nutritionist, we all know what to do.
Right.
It's just having somebody say, this is what you have to do. But with the traveling for the book, I thought, that would put on weight, but I've been pretty good.
How much of a schlep is that? How many cities are you hitting to promote the book?
Chicago's my last.
Oh, wow.
Well, I was
here. You were here for Oprah, right?
I was here for Oprah, but that seems to me like a year ago. It wasn't. It was the day the book was published. It had been embargoed. Nobody could read it until then, and that was May 6th. So it's been, just about a month.
Well,
that was the first time that anybody really knew what was in the book.
The bombshell.
You've been all over the place.
It wouldn't have been a bombshell if people had read the book. It was a bombshell because Oprah's people, who are very smart, and I adore Oprah, we go back a long way, they released that one
part.
I thought that's interesting, along with everything else. And that was the only thing that people had for 2 weeks. So they thought, this is going to be the juiciest kiss-and-tell book. She's going to write about all her lovers. Fortunately, I haven't had many. But that was the only...
Well, you're less than... That
was the only thing that came out.
And you talk pretty frankly in the book about your relationship. Who knew Alan Greenspan? Did you know that at the time,
Judy?
Well,
all my friends knew. And Alan,
you were, okay.
Alan Greenspan has written about me in his book.
Okay,
which came out last year. Alan and I are very old friends. Andrea Mitchell, his wife, and I are good friends. I went to their wedding. This book is not a book about the men in my life. I mean, that's fine. It's it's one chapter. And just to clear up with Senator Brooke, it's 4 pages out of 612. But I wrote about Senator Brooke. First of all, it was 31 years ago. This is hardly a recent event. He's been married for 26 years. The woman that he divorced has passed away.
He knew you were going to write this,
yes,
right?
He did.
You touched base with him first.
I did. But I wrote about it because I was really trying to say, look how things have changed. 31 years ago, and the reason this was a bombshell, I guess, was because he was an African-American. And 31 years ago, if it had come out that an African-American was going with a white woman on television or almost anywhere else, it would have destroyed my career and his. Now we have an African-American running for president. So the reason that I put this in, because the book is also in many ways historic, it's what was going on in the country. Well, all the different things were happening in my life. And I thought it was important to put in. When it came out, it looked as if I were having this affair 2 weeks ago, 31 years ago.
But he was a high-profile senator, and had he been a white senator married, say it had been Eugene McCarthy or something like that.
It would have been nothing because he went and asked for a divorce.
Pardon?
He was getting divorced.
But I'm just saying,
had
you don't
been
think
a white senator, I don't think it would have, let's say 31 years ago, it turned out that I was having a relatively brief romance with a white senator who asked for divorce. Tell me what the great shock. We have, for example,
I think a high-profile senator, we'd have all gone, oh! And did you know she
well,
was
did you go,
crazy
oh,
about him?
Over Katharine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy, who lived together for years?
No, but they were out.
Well, no, they were not. They kept it very hidden.
Well, how
you
did
you know about it?
We
but they
all
kept
knew
it very hidden.
Well, yeah, we did.
And
all
probably
know
had it been a white senator, it would have been out.
Did you ever interview him? Was
no.
there ever there, you never interviewed him? You never had any reason to.
Oh well, I would have had reason to, but we didn't. It was during Watergate.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, who was the hottest boyfriend you ever had?
Please forgive me, but that's not what this book is about.
It's one of them, and it's certainly something that people are interested in.
No, I don't write about the hottest boyfriend. I really don't.
Do you still date?
I have friends, yeah.
Okay. So you do still date. I mean,
well,
Barbara,
I
you interview
dating.
People.
I'm answering you. Yes, I
okay.
have friends. I don't consider it dating. I have friends I see, and some
okay.
of them are gay, and some of them are not. I have a social life.
You mentioned in the book that at one point, I think it was after your marriage to Lee Goober, that you say, maybe I'm not good at marriage. And then you went on and you married...
Merv.
After 12 years, you married Merv Adelson and stuff. Do you think it's true that marriage is just... I mean, Kathy often says, I just suck at marriage.
Yeah.
I'm not good at it. Do you think that that would be true of you, no matter who you had met along the way?
Well, that is something I say in the book. You know, probably I would have, if it were today, we would have lived together and not gotten married. You know, in those days,
yeah, it wasn't
you got married.
That's true.
And when I married Lee Goober, who was the father of
Jackie,
my adored child, it was right after the assassination, really weeks after the assassination of John Kennedy. And I think a lot of people got married.
Just
and
pulled
a lot
together.
Of people, I mean, it changed people's lives. One of the things that's sort of a theme in the book is not my hot lovers, but trying, especially for women, but these days for men too, trying to find that balance between marriage, career, and children. And it's very hard. And it was very hard then, and it's very hard today. And how much of this was the career, and how much of this was Merv Adelson, it was a bi-coastal marriage. That's very hard to do after a couple of years. So I don't know. I mentioned Katharine Hepburn a minute ago. I used two examples in the book because I have a chapter on celebrities who affected my life and why. And one of them is Katharine Hepburn, whose decision was never to have children. You know, if I had a little Johnny or a little Katie on opening night, I'd say, out of my way, out of my way. That's a terrible...
You do a very good one.
And then, so she didn't have children. That was what she did. Audrey Hepburn, on the other hand, whom I'd interviewed, and such a graceful, lovely, sort of doe-like person. She gave up her career because she had two children, two sons, and she said she couldn't do both. So I think that's something that throughout the book I talk about, because it affects so many women and men, especially now that so many women are working.
And
you refer in your own lives.
You refer to Barbara Bush, who made a statement, who made just very clear,
absolutely,
it has to be the children.
It has to be the children.
And it's almost haunting,
mm-hmm.
You know, and stayed with you that, oh my gosh, it has to be the children. Barbara Bush said so.
Well, that was her generation.
Yeah,
and it is. And, well, what she was also saying is the children have to come first. And I think we all feel that way. But sometimes it's very difficult when you've got a career and when you have to work. It's a different time.
You know, sometimes, though, you look back and go, she's an adult. She's got this great career. She's doing these great things. It all worked out. And you seem to do that.
Years ago, I heard my daughter, I mean, I'm going back a long way, and she was talking to a friend on the phone, and she said, my mommy doesn't drive, and my mommy burns the meatloaf, and my mommy can't do anything but television. And I thought, she's right. But I've had an extraordinary life, and it was by chance. I never thought I'd be in front of the cameras ever. I was a writer on television.
Nice surprise.
Oh well, I mean, I'm blessed. Yeah. I've had this extraordinary life.
Except for having to worry about clothes all the time.
No, I don't worry too much about clothes.
How long did you work on this book?
Well, it's number one in the country.
Wow.
Yeah, and I'm.
That's good news.
You bet. I mean, I have to say that I didn't expect it. And oh, but you know, I'll tell you something interesting, because we were talking about Alan Greenspan earlier.
Yes.
Okay. So they told me that there were only three books that had been number one when they had just been out, I guess, a week. And two of them were the Clinton's books, Hillary's book and Bill's book. And the third was Alan Greenspan's.
Was that
really? And the fourth is mine. Yeah.
Wow.
But his book was that kind of a
But his book was an economics book.
Well,
it wasn't
but
a tell,
first
was
part
it?
Of it, and okay. I don't want to spend my time with you talking about him, because he doesn't spend his time when
talking
he's
about
doing
you.
Interviews talking about me. But the first part of it was his rejection of the president, and that was great news to people. And
it made it very juicy.
I wanted to
get there.
Anyway,
when you just
met,
you just mentioned the Clintons, and you know all those years of doing heads of state interviews and all this kind of stuff. You do a friendly journalism now. You really do. Your journalism is really you get to do more personal things with The View and your specials and stuff. So. Do you know who your candidate is? Have you loved this election process? Are you
well? I am not as involved. I'm not as involved with it as I would have been had I stayed during 2020. I left 2020
right.
4 years ago. I can't believe it's been that long. And that's when I began to think about doing a book, because I thought I'm going to have all this time. As it turns out, I signed a new contract because the president of ABC said, no, you can't just not, and I do 4 specials a year. So I was writing this book summers, you know, holidays, night times, so forth. But I left 2020, and I'm sort of combining 2 things in one here, aren't I?
Well,
because I got tired of doing movie stars, celebrities coming out of rehab. And the news magazines were not, and still are not, doing that much on the politics. That yes, that's the news, but it's also mostly the cable station.
But all those years, it would have been unseemly for you to say, you know, where you stood politically.
I still don't. I don't.
And why would that be? Does that
Because I'm still a member of ABC News. That's my
You're still
primary.
Under the news division?
I'm under the news division. So that when I'm on The View, where I will discuss any number of things, whether I want to or not, I do not give my political
you
views.
You still are
You
not
just back
to.
Off during those conversations, generally.
If there's something outrageous or whatever, I will. But nobody knows who my candidate is. And I try to stay away from major issues, although I do write about them in the book. Right to lie.
Do you know? We can't ask you then, because you can't. You won't say. But do you know in your heart who your candidate is now?
Do I know who my candidate is now? Yes.
Okay. I was really surprised in your book to have you mention notes that you had written to people sometimes years ago. Mm-hmm. Is your memory that good, or are you a great record keeper?
Well, I have, first of all, to get people think that you just pick up the telephone and get an interview. And for me, it took, in some cases, especially with heads of state, years. I would write, I would call, I would write again. In doing this book, I never kept a diary, and I regret that. I cannot tell you how much, but I had all my old interviews. Had I kept the diary, this book would probably be 2,000 pages long, so in a way I'm lucky I didn't. And the major things in my life, especially the personal things, because this is primarily a personal story, those things you remember. I mean, I could ask you if the tables were turned, things in your childhood. I mean, I write about my sister, who was considered then mentally retarded. Today she'd be called developmentally
challenged.
Disabled or challenged or even autistic. And the effect that she had in my life, more than anyone else in my life. And I write about my father, who was very famous in show business, owned the most famous nightclubs in America, called the Latin Quarter, Lou Walters Latin Quarter. They were in Boston and Florida and New York. And the effect, the ups and downs of his life affected me. And then he lost everything. So that these are things I would remember. And for the rest, I did have all my old interviews, and I could go back and then and look. And even NBC, which I had left years ago, they were kind enough to send me my old,
archives.
As many as they had.
And what about your love letters?
Love letters. I don't have a lot of love letters.
You don't?
No, I don't. Because
you did
that
so
was pre-email.
Well from dating. I mean, yeah, I know. So they would have been notes and things like that. Did you keep any dear cards? I have a file called Keepers.
Well, I have a file too, but it's not old love letters. You know, because you always think, well, you know, I don't want other people to find them.
Well, you did have a picture. There's a picture in there of a note that Katharine Hepburn had scrawled to you.
I have a lot of letters from VIPs all over the world. I have Katharine Hepburn, I have Princess Diana, and then I have, I don't know, Fidel Castro signing my, the night that I interviewed him, it said, to the longest, what did he say, to the longest and most difficult interview I've ever done in my life, 1:29 a.m. You know, so I kept that.
That scene with Fidel Castro to me was kind of scary, and I wondered if that or some other time in your life in interviewing when people are saying, now we're going to fly this place or we will go to my villa, and the sense is, well, wait a minute, that wasn't the plan. Is there a time in your life that you can look back at and go, I was a little scared at that point?
You know, it's strange. I mean, because my father was in show business, I grew up never being in awe of celebrities. I knew they had pain, and I knew they had hurt. And I'm very courageous when I'm doing a story. You're talking about Fidel Castro. We crossed the Bay of Pigs with him.
Yeah, and he's taking me all over the place.
And I've interviewed Saddam Hussein and Muammar Gaddafi and Vladimir Putin, and I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid, okay. But in my private life, I don't have that kind of courage. But there are lots of us who are different. I'm not an actor, but actors are so different, so many of them, when on camera and off. And somehow my fear goes. The only thing that I worried about when I took these trips, I wasn't worried about Castro, but when I went to Iraq, when Saddam Hussein was still in power, they're in the middle of the war with Iran, and I worried about my daughter. And I thought, what if something happened to me? But ordinarily I don't, and I don't know where it comes from, but I just don't.
Well, one of our listeners, our girlfriend, says, I'm about three quarters through the book, and I think a major theme is living during a long time period when she was unliked and unwanted. She knew she had no friends in the corporate world where she made her career, but she didn't turn and run to find a place where everyone loved her. I can relate, so I appreciate that theme. I hope she's now enjoying her place in life where many, many people do love her for who she is. She is no longer unwanted. Is this somebody else's story? This is a listener.
About your book,
that she—that's what she was getting—was that there was a long period of time when you didn't feel that people could relate.
I think one of the reasons it's been successful, because I didn't want to do, and then I interviewed. That's a bore. Is that people can relate? There are many people who have had somebody in their family or know of somebody who was troubled or disabled, and the effect it has on their life. I think there are many people trying to balance their lives as I did. When I came to ABC to be the first female co-anchor of a network news program, I was a failure. I was drowning. I thought I was going to be fired. And I had to work my way back. And I think that there are a lot of people who have had something similar, maybe not something that was as well known. So that I think that people can relate to my experiences and my guilt, and you know.
Yeah. Did you go home and cry? Did you on those days when he was so horrible, or when people? Didn't you ever just go home and cry?
Well, I used to cry just before I went on the air.
Just getting ready here,
you know, because I knew I was going to walk into that control room where it wasn't just Harry Reasoner, who had not wanted a partner and certainly didn't want a woman. But the stagehands didn't talk to me, and the cameramen didn't talk to me, and there were no camera women, you know, because they were Harry's people. And what kind of got me through were letters from viewers who said, and not in television, hang in there, we're going through the same thing. If you can do it, we can do it.
And did this coincide at all with Jackie's experience? I mean, where was Jackie?
Jackie was very young then, but what I used to go home, and my home life was wonderful. Jackie was 7 or 8. It was one of the reasons that I left the Today Show, where I'd been so comfortable. I thought, and I'd been there 13 years, I thought, I don't have to get up at 4:30.
Oh, right, I can be there.
And then there came that wonderful day when I got a telegram from a man I'd never met, and I opened it up. And it said, don't let the bastards get you down.
And that was
John Wayne.
We're talking to Barbara Walters about her memoir called Audition.
You know, what's such a joy about what we all get to do is have an opinion with the microphone in front of it and learn from others.
Absolutely.
Learn from other people.
But when you do radio, as you do, you can go on for a very long time. Television has a different agenda. I mean, I have been on probably longer than... most men and probably any woman. But, you know, you have to still worry about the way you look and people writing about you. And radio gives you, you don't have to struggle with that. So if I were I would just stay on and on and on.
You know, I was going to ask you this because I was thinking you've probably been in front of a camera more than any, consistently, than any person in America, certainly than any woman. So when do you allow yourself not to have to wash your hair that day, not to wear makeup, like if it's a weekend and you're at home, or are you afraid someone will come to the door?
No, I don't worry about that. And I don't, when I'm
on the market. If you go to the market.
No, well, if I used to go out with no makeup and my hair, you know, whatever. And I have a cousin whom I write about a lot in the book who used to say, Shirley, put lipstick on. So at least I put lipstick on. People recognize me more from my voice. I don't have bodyguards. I don't have press agents. I go, you know, I walk around in the neighborhood all weekend long. And sometimes I'm recognized, but people very rarely come up to me. When they do, they're usually from out of town. New Yorkers are very blasé.
Uh-huh.
Or maybe they're more polite. Maybe they're more used to seeing celebrities. But, I remember years ago, and I can't remember whether I wrote about it. It seems to me I've written about everything in this book. When I was with my daughter when she was a little girl in Bloomingdale's, and I said, "Don't touch that." And somebody said, "Aren't you Barbara Walters?"
Dang.
Yeah.
Now
but I have what I think is a very normal life. I guess it isn't. But
I
have friends, and it's a private life. And
do you have a best girlfriend?
Yeah, that's what
we always
My
like
best
that.
Friends are not celebrities. The only one who was, and I'll sort of skip almost to the end of this book, because I've said that I've stopped auditioning. And I was at a dinner recently, and there was a man who was the head of a major motion picture company, and he was still driving and going and doing, and he said, "How do you know I'm still auditioning? How do you know when you've stopped?" And I said, "Well, let me tell you a story." I had a very dear friend named Beverly Sills, who was one of the great operatic sopranos. And when she left the Metropolitan Opera, her husband gave her a ring with an inscription. And 10 years later, when she left as the director of the New York City Opera, she gave me that ring. And it says, "I did that already." And when you feel, "I did that already," then you know you don't have to audition anymore. And I think I'm there now. I've interviewed almost everyone that there was to interview. There's always somebody new, that's true. But I don't want to do the next big get and the next big get. My daughter, after a terrible adolescence, is wonderful.
She's stable, yeah.
Well, she's not only stable. She runs a therapeutic wilderness program for adolescent girls in crisis. It's called New Horizons. It's in Maine. And everything that she went through herself, she's now put towards this. So I'm at a very good place in my life.
We talk on this show a lot. I talked and even wrote in a national magazine when I had plastic surgery, and I know you've copped to Botox. You just look too good for your
you
age.
Do you you know got 15 years on us,
no,
and you look 15 years younger.
Nice.
Now are you willing to talk about that at
to
all
talk about Botox? Sure.
No, about surgery. About plastic surgery,
The only thing that I'm very blessed, because if you look in the book and see pictures of my mother has very high cheekbones. My mother at 90, and probably looked 70. But I don't think you need to have plastic surgery these days. I think that when you have Botox and when you have the fillers like Restylane and some of the others, it makes an enormous difference, and you don't have to. I would not have plastic surgery.
Have a knife, but you've had the Botox and the Restylane and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You have a good neck.
I talk about it, and Joy talks about it. Joy Behar talks about it, too. And I have no idea how old Joy is. She will not tell us.
Wow. So two of you don't exactly say your age on The View.
No.
That's so interesting.
Well, everybody, you know, pretty much writes my age. So Joy has kept, I have no idea how old Joy is.
Wow.
That's
hilarious? A riot.
Yeah.
That's a riot.
Yeah.
Do you have a zillion closets? Because you're seldom seen in the same outfit.
But I wear the same things again and again and again.
On television?
Today, oh, yeah. But you can't tell. I mean, for example, today, as you say, I'm wearing a black suit,
right?
And I have a white flower on it, and a black little T-shirt. Okay. Now, I
could wear... No, white camisole. You have a T-shirt alike.
Yeah, no, it's camisole.
Yeah, okay.
Tomorrow I can wear it with a black T-shirt and I don't know,
a scarf.
Thing or a scarf.
Right.
I keep my clothes a long time, and
Who gets them when you're done?
Who gets them when I'm done?
Some skinny person.
You know, I'm heavy in New York. This sounds awful, but I have everybody
stand
looks
next to
Nan
Kempner.
Well,
everybody
Nan Kempner was even Sarah Jessica Parker. I was just reading about her, and she's a size zero.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
well, you look like you're about a four.
No, I'm an eight.
You are?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I would not have guessed that. Yeah. Did you ever have a deal where somebody said, if you wear our clothes, just
I'm not
for
allowed
credit?
To.
Oh, yeah. So you always have to buy
I
your
have
own.
To have my own clothes. But I have a lot of separates. I keep them a long time.
What's your best outfit? What outfit do you think? Oh, I feel so good in that.
Goodness.
Is it that dress that you're wearing on the back of the book, the long black dress with the little thing?
Isn't that funny? I didn't know that picture was even going to be taken. That was taken at an Emmy Award when I won, when I was given a Lifetime Achievement Award. I think it's a wonderful picture. I don't own it.
That's not your dress.
No, I don't own the picture. I do own the dress.
Oh, I see.
And
okay.
And the fake pin. You see the
rhinestone pin? Yes, if you're at your hip.
Fake pin at my hip.
Costume.
I don't travel with real jewelry.
Is that right? No. Do you have it all cataloged in your apartment?
Oh, I'm not that organized.
You're not?
No, I'm telling you, I live. I don't. It's not categorized. I don't have closets that turn around.
Do you make your bed on Sunday?
I make my bed on Sunday.
I always.
Oh, I don't. I just pull the coverlet off and say nobody's coming in.
Do you
today.
Make your bed in a hotel room? I do that.
No.
Oh, that is
That's
so
crazy.
Isn't
I
that
pull
amazing?
Up the sheets. I can't stand to be in a room without the bed made. My father, he was tidy.
Yeah.
Now, I'm tidy too, but I don't get up in the morning and make my bed in the hotel room.
We know we're going to lose you at 10:30 before we leave. Are you a techno geek? Do you have
no,
a BlueBerry?
I have
do you
a BlackBerry.
Do email?
I do have a BlackBerry.
I mean.
I can't do email. I can't do anything else.
Do you have an iPod?
But I wrote. I never listened to it, but I did write the book in the computer. My horror was writing it and then losing it.
Having a crash.
Losing it, and then I had to call somebody from the office. I lost it! I lost it! Everything! Oh, my goodness!
Did you do that, or that was just what you feared?
Oh, no, I did lose it, and then you have to get it back, and so then, and then there's a little thing that you put in that records it all. I have that little, then I'm showing it to you.
The little separate.
A flash drive.
Exactly. A flash drive, right.
But you know, but I'm very, I tell you, there's nothing I can do. I'm not an athlete.
You still
don't drive.
No. You never took driving lessons.
I did, but I'm scared. My mother didn't drive.
Well, yeah. And I think being in New York and around New York, absolutely not. The book is number one. It's called Audition, and
it's a great read.
It is.
We both thoroughly enjoyed
it. It's very chatty.
Yeah, you know? It is.
It's very...
Did you have to cut any of it out?
I think if I were going... it began to get awfully long, you know, and I had to... The publisher was saying, put it in. I probably would have... I trimmed it, but not really. I wanted to tell the personal story, and I wanted to tell the rest. And I love the two of you. I just think you're both adorable. The fact that you've been doing this for 20 years and that you're best friends.
Oh, bless your heart. Thank you. We've enjoyed
that. Really wonderful.
We've enjoyed having you here as well. And you have beautiful hair.
I have good hair.
Yeah.
I have good hair. I have good cheekbones. I have good legs. The rest.
Your teeth are good.
The rest and the teeth are my own. I'm just going to sit here and be complicated. Don't look at the rest, okay?